session number 9253, reel 4.
Mr. Jack Dorgan, reel 4. You registered then with the Scout magazine. What happened then?
Well, we registered, and I remember that in Northumberland, quite a number registered, and someone in Newcastle, just forget them for the name at the moment, started an organisation to bring together all the different scout troops in Northumberland. That was in late 1908. And I went to Newcastle, and I used to go regularly to the meetings after that in Newcastle, because you could go to Newcastle by buses. I was old-fashioned buses by then in 1908. Sorry, went by train. It was later that I went by bus, went by train to Newcastle, and we mixed with scout troops from Whitley Bay, Newcastle, and different places in Northumberland. And eventually they started an association in Northumberland, the Northumberland Boy Scouts. And I remember one of the officials, flash dressed, looking fella, once came through to Ashington to look us over, and he was very impressed with us, and he came several times after that, you know, because we were firmly established then. Meeting in the summer down the three fields with about six or seven patrols, and then the winter came, and I hired a warehouse behind one of the shops on the shop front, on one of the shopping centre of Ashington. I remember it was a very, very cold winter, that first winter of 1907 and 8. Very, very cold. So we looked up different games and all that to keep ourselves active and so on. And I remember I had the patrols, quite a number of patrols, you know, and each had the sections and so on. And we used to chalk on the walls, Hawk Patrol, Beaver Patrol, and so on. And that was where we all stood. And I was the only one, I was the biggest lad there, you see. Now, as the troop grew in the second year, we thought we'd better have some adult with us, because, I mean, it was going big. So there was a chap called Rigby, very nice fella, forget his first name. His father was a shopkeeper, and he had been to the grammar school. I never went to the grammar school, but I passed the when I went to school, I passed the exam to go to the grammar school at Morpeth. But I never went because my mother couldn't provide me with decent clothes to go. The headmaster, Frank Gorcock, came and saw my mother. He says, "Mrs. Dorgan, do you realise that your boy is the only boy for years who's passed in the Choppenden School, Colliery School, to go to grammar school. And he must go to the grammar school." And she said, "What was the matter? She couldn't give me proper clothes to go." He says, "I'll provide his first suit of clothes." Frank Walcott said. I said, "Your mother said, yes. Who'll provide the suit when that's worn out?" "No, he's not going to grammar school. Can't go." So I never went to grammar school. Well, this Rigby went to the grammar school, and we boys, were still boys then, you know, I was only about 15 then, we thought he was, you know, a grand type of lad. Aye, but He couldn't, when we want to go on parade, you know, he wouldn't go out with us. He wouldn't advertise himself as a scout, you see. And we had uniform, you know. We had the old-fashioned Boer War hat, and we had a khaki shirt, which we bought at the second-hand shop in Newcastle, and short pants, and old broomsticks, you know, and haversack. We thought we were scouts. So we were at that time. Aye. But he wouldn't. He wouldn't get a uniform, he wouldn't join, so we chucked him. We chucked him out. And we got another fella. He's an ex-soldier. Aye. He used to come to the meetings. We only kept him a few weeks. And he used to collect the pennies we paid every week, paid a penny a week. And then we never saw him again until the next week when he came to collect the pennies. So we chucked him. So we went back again to me, Jack Dorgan, senior patrol leader. But as time went on, I became 17.
How did you manage to find the time with you? Because you were working by then, 10 hours a day.
Well, that's all we did when I came out, yes. Oh, 10 hours a day, oh yes. But you see, you started early in the morning, you see, and 6 o'clock in the morning, 6 and so on. Well, of course, you had every evening free, you see. Oh yes, I started, yes.
Right. So, sorry to interrupt. Could you carry on with where you were? You took back over control.
Yes, I took over control, and I maintained control ever since. So I was the founder of the first Hearst Boy Scouts, which today is still flourishing. Now today, it's controlled by a nephew of mine, my younger brother Tom. His son is called Nicol Dorgan, and he now, in Ashington, is the scout master of the first Hearst Scout Troop. Is also the district commissioner for Ashington, which I eventually, as time went on, became. I became assistant scout master of the first Hearst when I was 17. You had to be 18, really, before you became a warranted officer. And I had, by that time, we had an organization in Northumberland, and they appointed scout masters. I got a warrant for it, you know. I've got it now. Lost it in London in the bombing.
Did they give, when the organisation started, did you start getting instructions about what the uniform should be and things like that?
Oh, well, that grew as time went on, you see, because you had the weekly scout, and then we had the meetings in Northumberland, and each county had their own county organisation, and built up from that way, and uniforms and organisations sort of gradually grew.
Was there still a very much a military flavour in it as it became more organised?
No. Very little military in the Boy Scouts at that time, or even now, I don't know. But even that time, no. We
didn't
went for camping, nature law, signalling, tracking. We read and tried to learn more about birds and animals and nature craft and so on. Oh yes.
But you didn't drill.
Well, yes, in a way, we had our patrols. And we always, I mean, for instance, when we were in that place at the back of the shops where we had that winter, we would form up in our patrols, the 6 or 7 patrols, one behind another. And then after we called the roll, I would go around and inspect them to see they were clean and tidy and as much uniform that they had. And then they dispersed into the different corners, into what they called patrol corners. And they would study birds or animals or tracking, signalling, all they did signalling. Morse code and semaphore. We became experts in semaphore. Later, not Morse, but later we did Morse with tappers and receivers, you know.
But you didn't do drill like the church lads?
Oh, no, nothing like that. No.
So, in your view, the Boy Scouts in your area were much less military-minded than the Church Lads Brigade had?
Oh, been. Yeah, different altogether. Oh, yes. Oh, never drilled at all like that. Oh, no. The only time we were in any drill formation was when we formed up at the beginning of the evening's programme. And at the end of the programme, I always remember we had the Union Jack. Or intensely loyal, or intensely nationalist, you know. The Union Jack was something to be treasured in those years. And we always had a flagpole. And as the time went on in years, we got money through working for it. We got quite a lot of money. And I bought an old chapel. A chapel which was disused and was an old corrugated iron with a wood. It was a corrugated iron outside and a wood frame inside. And it had only half a floor in. I bought that just outside of Ashenden, an old village somewhere. And
this is before the war, before 1940?
Oh, yes. Long before the war, many years before the war. And I got some friends, you see, a scout troop started over the river by a young fella called Gordon, Tommy Gordon. Now, Tommy Gordon was about my age, and he started the scouts in Stake Ford, just over the river from Ashenden. And his father had a haulage business. And they were very good friends of our scout troop, the Gordon family, through the son being a scout. And his firm, Haulage Company, they dismantled this corrugated iron chapel, transported it to a site in Ashenden, just down on the outskirts of Ashenden. I remember I got the site, and I had to go to Bothell Castle. Now, at Bothell Castle, it was a real castle outside of Ashenden, between Ashenden and Morpeth, about 2.5 miles from Ashenden, at a village called Bothell. Bothell Castle, and Mr. Sample was, I don't know what you'd call him, but he looked after the estate. It was part of the Duke of Portland's estate. You know, all that area was part of the Duke of Portland's estate. And Mr. Sample was responsible for all that area where we lived. And once a year, I used to go there, and I was I walked into his office, and I stood in front of him there, and I laid a shilling on the table. And he gave me a receipt, all very ceremonial, for that shilling. And that was the year's rent for this ground rent. Aye, Mr. Sample. He and I got good friends. He used to give me a glass of wine or something. I never tasted wine. I used to taste his wine, and he used to toast me because he thought that I did a wonderful job with the Boy Scouts, you see.
It was a lot of responsibility then, at an early age.
I've always had, yes, I've always had. So I bought this, and unfortunately it was near a railway line between Ashenden and Newbiggin. And one night It was knocking at my door. And when that mother shouted, "There's somebody at the door." So I goes downstairs and goes to the door. And there was I was an assistant scoutmaster. But I was a senior assistant scoutmaster. Only 17 or 18, we were 18 then. And that one of my lads, Stoker Redfern, they called him. And he worked at Ashington. And he worked on the surface, the pit head. And he had been there, and somebody says, "There's a fire away down where your scout hut is." So Stoker Redfern, one of my assistants, came, and there it was. "Here's our scout building on fire." We could only assume, it wasn't done intentionally, I don't think, but I could only assume that a spark from the railway had set on fire. But I had it insured. Me, as just a youngster, didn't know very much about things. Somebody must have mentioned it. I had it insured for £400. And I got a cheque for £400. It was wonderful, you know. I put it into the bank, the same bank I'm in here, what do you call it? I forget what it's called. What do you call the banks?
Doesn't matter.
No, it didn't matter. Well, I put it in the bank there. And we set to work then, looking around for a new scout building. And a London firm, they were advertising huts, all made out of old buildings. So I got in touch with these people. They came up, and they built me this scout building, which I remember it was about 80 foot long, about 25 or 30 feet wide. And it was a big hall, and then where the stage had been. That had been some old hall, you see, and been dismantled. It was an old building that had been dismantled, but it was all good timber, and they built me this scout hut.
What year was that about?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, really. Forgetting. But I got 400 quid and none of for the building, for the rent was burnt out before the war, and then I had this building built, scout building.
So you continued this work with the scouts right up to 1914, did you?
Oh, yes. I mean, no, it was stopped, of course. Yes, 1914. But before that, of course, 1914, I joined the Territorial Army.
Why did you join the Territorial Army?
Well, I don't think I have a real answer to that. 1911... I was 18 years of age, and young and healthy, active, fond of camping, very, very fond of camping. And I think at that stage I can only say that I joined the Territorial Army because that a fortnight's camp every year and several weekend camps during the year. I think that's the only thing. I mean, at that time, there was no mention on the newspapers or anywhere about the war coming. In fact, the only world disturbance regarding Britain was Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland was very, very prominent, and there was lots and lots of trouble in Ireland. In fact, when I was called up, I really thought, for the First World War, I thought I was going to Northern Ireland. There was no mention of war with Germany.
So you joined the Territorials. What date was it you actually joined?
Well, that was in 1911, when I was 18. So actually, it was in 3 years before 1914, before the war came.
And what can you just say what battalion you joined?
Yes, now I've mentioned, or I haven't mentioned, no. In Northumberland, the Northumberland Fusiliers composed of the 1st and 2nd Battalions were regular soldiers, and our headquarters was in Newcastle. The 3rd Battalion of the Northumberland, by the way, a battalion is about 1,500 strong. 3rd Battalion was a reserve battalion. Then came the Territorial Army, the 4th Battalion, 5th Battalion, 6th Battalion, and the 7th Battalion. Now, each battalion is centered around certain districts in Northumberland. The 4th Battalion and 5th Battalion around in Newcastle and its neighborhood. The 6th Battalion was perhaps just outside of Newcastle. Now, the 7th Battalion, which I joined, was composed of 8 companies, and each of those companies was centered on the different towns in North Northumberland. A company was centered on Morpeth. B company, which I joined, was centered on Ashington. So that everybody in B company of the 7th Northumberland Fusiliers, we all knew each other. We all came from the one town, Ashington. The 3rd Battalion, the 3rd Company, rather, would come from Amble, and everybody would come from Amble. And another company came from Annick and Berwick and so different towns, 8 different towns in North Northumberland. And we all joined together, and there was 8 companies in that battalion, the 7th Battalion, Northumberland Fusiliers.
How did you actually go about joining? What did you do to physically
join?
Well,
it was in Ashington. In Ashington, there was a drill hall. Now, this was when I joined in 1911. The Territorial Army had been in existence 2 years before. Only 2 years, quite new. And the authorities had built a drill hall for the Territorial Army, so that in Ashington, we had a drill hall of our own. Each town had a drill hall of their own, in which they met every whenever required. I joined, formed that. You see, Territorial Army in those days was only for home defence. They were not required to go abroad. They were only in case of Britain being invaded. But they had a special service section in the Territorial Army which you could join, and you could go be called up for active service abroad. So I joined, naturally. I want to see as much of the world as possible. So I joined the special service section.
How did you actually go about joining? Now, you went to the drill hall, and
went to the drill hall and just said I wanted to join. And within a week or two, I was issued with a uniform, a rifle, Lee Enfield, and we used to go for shooting practices.
Did they give you a physical examination?
Oh yes. Everybody had a physical examination, both medical and physical. Both medical and physical. Oh, yes, you had to be fit and well to have joined the Territorial Army. There was no invalids in that, you see, because we used to go weekend camps during the year, and we used to go shooting weekends with all Lee Enfields.
I want to ask you about your training. Did you never think of joining the regular army?
No. I was just a Territorial, and I was quite happy to be a Territorial Army and living at home. Oh, no, never thought of it.
You didn't fancy the life of a regular soldier, then?
No thoughts at all of that.
Why didn't you? Was there any reason?
Well, I had no thoughts. I was quite happy at home. And as long as there was peace, well, I would be living at home and enjoying. You see, the Territorial Army provided me with my one big pleasure, camping. Did a lot of camping, you know, in bale tents and shooting.
I'd like to run through the things you did with the Territorial Army. The first one, did you drill with them in the drill hall? Could you describe the sort of drill you did?
Well, infantry drill, you had to, you were in a company, first of all. Now, each company had squads, four squads of about 12 or 15 men, and then a company, you see, would compose about 70 or 80 men. And Ashenden Company, we used to parade, you know, inspected by a Lance Corporal, your corporals, and then you were inspected by a standing in four lines. You see, at that time, the army marched in fours, not threes. Today, infantry regiment marches in three, but those days, you marched in fours. So we would be standing four lines, one behind another, you know, 15 men. And you'd be inspected by a corporal and then a sergeant to see if you're correctly dressed and shaved, those who did shave. I didn't shave those days. And then you were inspected by your platoon officer. You see, there was two platoons in every company. And in every platoon you had, I think it was four squads, you know. Now each squad would have a lance corporal in charge. Each platoon had a corporal and a sergeant. And then you had an officer in charge of each platoon. Now, Ashenden, we had a platoon, and we had two platoons, yes, in Ashenden, because we were a fairly large group of men. An old officer at that time, I always remember, was the Honourable Watson Armstrong. Generally, in the Territorial Army, right through up North Northumberland, the officers came from the landed gentry. When Lord Armstrong was the owner of a tremendous block of land up in the Cheviots in Northumberland, and the Honourable Watson Armstrong was his son. We called him Watty Armstrong. He wasn't of the brightest, Watty. In fact, when I was a platoon sergeant later, and we were being drilled by our company officer, the company officer would be standing, giving orders for each company, four companies in the battalion. And he would give the orders, and then the platoon officer, Honourable Watson, had to pass on the order. He was always late in thinking out, and me, I used to stand behind him as a platoon officer, platoon sergeant, and I used to whisper in a loud whisper, "Left wheel," and then he would say, "Left wheel," and so on. I was one day, I remember one day when Captain Milburn gave an order and the Honourable Watson Armstrong was slow in replying, and Milburn must have overheard me whispering in a loud whisper what the order was. And he says, "Mr. Armstrong, you're a bloody fool." And the Honourable Watson Armstrong,